So our study, we had left off in Revelation 13 with verse 15. And what we will, what we want to do is just reread, the part of this, Revelation 13. And, Sister, Carrie, could you read for us Revelation 13 and read verse, 11 through, 18, please?
Okay, thanks. Revelation 13, 11 to 18. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. And he exercised all the power of the first beast before him, and caused the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. And he doth great wonders, so that he make fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceived them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And he caused all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. And that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark, or the name of the beast, or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666.
All right. Thank you, Sister Carrie. Excuse me. So we had good discussion about this second two-horned beast being the Church of England and Ireland, Ireland breaking away after 333 years, that this Church of England developed and was created by Henry VIII, 1531. And we discussed how he was mostly a civil ruler first, the religious leader second. That's still true today in the Church of England. The Church of England was able to persecute heretics to a large degree under their authority, but they were not as powerful as the papacy and the Holy Roman Empire, which encompassed Europe. They weren't that powerful, but they were able to do their claims, religious claims of apostolic succession for their bishops. And they were able to do that and have the Church of England develop and prosper, so to speak, in the sight of the papacy. So they set an example that you can set up another church and state religious system successfully. And they did that in the sight of the papal beast. And so now, since the 1500s, we've had both the 10-horned beast, papacy, and the 2-horned beast, the Church of England. And a beast is that which is a church and state arrangement. It's the beast is a religious head and a civil authority head together in one. And we read in verse 15, which is where we left off. We're going to pick up there. I guess I should say that to round out the review is that the beast that had the wound to the head and did live was the papal beast, was wounded by the Reformation and then by the Counter-Reformation and such. It was able to be healed, as it were, and continue to live on as what I've numbered as the fourth head. Regardless what number you like, it still was a head and it still continued. So wounded as a head, but then it was healed and still continued as a head. And so we think that's the Holy Roman Empire and continued the Holy Roman Empire. That fourth head continued to the time of Napoleon, who then, of course, brought down the remnant of the Holy Roman Empire with imprisoning the Pope twice, and once he died. So that broke that power of the papacy in that way. So that gets us to our verse 15. Did anyone have any question on what we just read, you know, the previous verses here? And I just kind of summarized. Does anyone have any question on that? Okay, so let's move forward. Our verse 15, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast, and that the image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So let's start with who is the he that had power to give life unto the image, and what does that mean? Berlin?
The he would be the two-horned beast, had power to make, had power to give life onto the image of the beast. So the Evangelical Alliance was the image of the beast. They had come together, but had no power. They needed to be given that power like the papacy had, showing, of course, we know it's not the truth of the matter, but that they had apostolic succession going all the way back to Peter, and they had the authority from God to be religious rulers, and the two-horned beast, or the two-horned beast, the Church of England and Ireland, they had the same claim because they broke away, and they took their bishops, who they say have apostolic succession. So here the two-horned beast gives the power, and we think it will be that they will give the apostolic succession the power, like the papacy, like the Church of England, and it will cause them to be able to speak with authority and power, and we'll just leave it there, Brother Rick.
Okay, thanks, Brother Dan. Sister Cheryl.
Same thought, but Brother Dan said it much better. Over.
Okay. Anyone else on this? Okay. Ruth?
Interesting that when the image of the beast gets power, it speaks and causes as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed, and to receive the mark and all that, but it doesn't become a beast. It becomes a false prophet. So it's different than the other beasts. It's not like a church-state government. It's a whole new thing. Over.
Very true. And we're going to develop that a little bit more, but it's an important point. When the image of the beast, it's a religious system, but it doesn't have civil authority. So it's still only an image of a beast. It's like a partial beast, but doesn't become an actual beast in that way. That was the Evangelical Alliance. Sister Alice.
I just want to mention, my great grandfather was Irish, and it always bothered me, but then I found out he was Orange Irish. And that's the Protestants in Ireland. The Green Irish were the Catholics. And when he came to this country, he married my great-grandmother, who was Methodist, and then they got the truth. But I also want to mention that I was thinking of Brother Russell's comment about the German churches. And in Brother Gene's notes on the image of the beast. It's online. It said that two papal cardinals were against granting Henry VIII a divorce. And what was interesting was that she was the aunt of Charles V, Emperor of Germany, and the Pope was closely aligned with him. So that tied in Germany with the Pope's, why the Emperor of Germany would be tied in with Henry VIII. And I just thought that was interesting. The connections are a little complicated, but very interesting. That's all.
Okay, thank you, Sister Alice. Appreciate that. The life that would vitalize this image, Brother Russell, as we read in the fourth volume, suggests that it is the passing on of this supposed apostolic succession. This would give legitimacy to the evangelical alliance in the sense that supposed apostolic succession goes back to the original 12 apostles. And when they laid their hands on other bishops, it passed on apostolic authority. Now, we know that's not true. There's only 12 apostles of the Lamb. However, this is this false claim. This is one of, as it were, the marks of the beastly systems, is that they claim this apostolic succession, and those who are members of those churches are apparently accepting what we consider to be a grievously false doctrine, but they use it to try to claim their authority. Now, in today's world, apostolic succession is claimed by the Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Old Catholic Church, the Swedish Lutheran Church, the Anglican churches, and in recent years, a number of other Lutheran churches, and have coordinated with the Evangelical Catholics High Church in the United States, and they are claiming to have covenanted together to pass on this supposed apostolic succession. The Anglican churches, which you would see as sometimes abbreviated ACC, Anglican Catholic Church. This is a form of the Episcopal. It's worldwide. They would all claim this similarly. However, we expect it to develop more in the future. There are ongoing talks between a number of different churches, denominations, with the Lutherans and with Catholics and with the Anglicans, all trying to position having bishops so that in their clergy structure, so they could receive apostolic succession. So they're working on that behind the scenes. Brother Chris.
Yeah, I just looked up Episcopal, and that's what the word means, governed by bishops, and it is tied to the Church of England. The American version is much more liberal, but still tied. Over.
Okay, very good. Episcopal. Very good. So, we think Brother Russell was had interpreted this, we believe, correctly. We think there's more to be developed in this down the road. But the thing is that it's not going to be just the Evangelical Alliance that will receive this vitalization. They'll be leaders in there because of the scripture. But as Brother Russell observed, he believes there's going to be a broader federated Protestants. It's going to be a larger than just the Evangelical Alliance as we know it today, but there will be a broader federation of Protestant denominations who will be part of this vitalized image. Sister Alice.
Just just to mention that the Evangelical Alliance formed in 1846, which is an interesting date, cleansing of the sanctuary. And the World Council of Churches was formed in 1948 in Amsterdam, which is also interesting, the year that Israel became a nation.
Yes, very good. And we did talk about 1846 last year and the cleansing of the sanctuary class of those who would not join the Evangelical Alliance and accept their nine-point doctrine. And that's very good. Thank you for bringing that out again. So when we see that this image of the beast should both speak, we're just going to hold up there. We're not going to address the marking at this point, but should speak. Ruth started to bring it out, and we're going to develop this a little bit more about this speaking. It becomes, as stated, it becomes the false prophet. Brother Russell makes that observation for us in that fourth volume we read. But I would like to I would like us to take a look for a moment at Revelation 19, verse 20. And Sister Brenda, could you read there for us, please? Revelation 19, 20.
Revelation 19, verse 20 reads, "Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who works signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were cast alive into the lake of fire, burning with brimstone." Over.
Okay, thank you. So, brethren, this is in the far in the future. Well, I mean, well, somewhere in the future, sorry. But we like this verse because we think it helps, and it might be what Brother Russell used, I can't say for sure, to give us authority on how we're interpreting three symbols. We're taking three symbols and we're reducing it to two when they're destroyed. They're alive, they're active when they're destroyed. So how do we get three symbols to two? And this verse helps us do that. It tells us that both were cast alive. That's two. So how do we get two out of the beast, the false prophet, and the image, those who worship the image of the beast? So what do we end up with? How does that happen? Ruth.
Are you referring to the two-horned beast and the image of the beast combine forces and become the false prophet? So you go back to, instead of having three things in Revelation 13 at the end of it, you've got two. You've got the federated Protestants that are pictured in the false prophet, and then you still have the papacy in the beast.
Yes, so we end up the Church of England, when it gives life to the image, this becomes federated Protestantism. It's a whole. It's one camp. The papists, the ten-horned beast, is a second camp. These are the two halves of churchanity. These are the two halves of so-called Christendom. And so we see that in the future, the Church of England, because it's going to give its authority of apostolic succession to this image, which was the Evangelical Alliance, the two-horned beast loses its identity, and it becomes part of federated Protestantism. And with that, other Protestant denominations align themselves so that we end up with the Christian world in the future having the two parts, the two ends of a thorny scroll, depicted in, I believe, Isaiah. So this is why we don't read anything more about what happens to the two-horned beast. We don't read anything more about the two-horned beast in the rest of Revelation. Because when we leave it in the 13th chapter, it is now part of this vitalized image. It's joined with it. It's given its authority to it. So it's joined with it. So we end up with the beast, ten-horned beast papacy. We end up with now this vitalized image of the beast, including the Church of England, and it takes on another title. It's known as the false prophet. So when we were emphasizing in Revelation 13:15 that when this two-horned beast gives its power to the image, gives it life, it should speak. What does a prophet do? A prophet speaks. A prophet speaks in the name of God, supposedly. But a false prophet is falsely claiming to speak for God. A false prophet is not telling you the truth. So it fits well that when it speaks, we should look for a symbol which would represent this speaking. So here's our false prophet. Now, I just want to ask, is there any other comment here on Revelation 19:20, or we'll look at another verse with the false prophet? Was there any comment or question here? 19:20? So then let's look at Revelation 16 and we're going to need to read verses 12 through 14, 12 through 14. And, let's see. Brother Palermo, are you able to read?
Okay. What verse is that?
Chapter 16, verses 12 through 14, please.
Revelation 16, chapter 12 to 14. And the sixth poured out his bowl upon the great river, the river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way might be made ready for the kings that come from the sun rising. And I saw coming out of the mouth of the dragon, and out of the mouth of the beast, and out of the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits, and it were frogs. For they are spirits of demons, working signs, with go forth unto the kings. Over.
There's a little bit more there.
Go forth unto the kings of the whole world, to gather them together unto the reward of the great day of God, the Almighty.
Yes. God, the Almighty. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. You have an opening comment on this, Brother Palermo?
No, thank you.
Okay. So we're going to state some of the obvious. We think this is still future. Some brethren have it as started. Some brethren have this as past. But from our point of view, we think we're understanding from Brother Russell that this is still a future event. And that what we want to just focus on here for today's study, and we'll come to this in future studies, but for today's study, we see that we have the three. We have the dragon, we've got the beast, and we got the mouth of the false, we've got the false prophet. So here we have three, but let's again identify these three. And Brother Adi, could you identify these three symbols for us? Are you in a position to do that?
You're talking about the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet?
Please.
So the dragon is the Roman Empire. The beast, I believe that's the original beast, the ten-horned beast. and the false prophet is Federated Evangelical Alliance with the Church of England.
Okay. Now, so Brother Adi, fine-tune that. What part of the Roman Empire is the dragon? I mean, what does the dragon represent in the Revelation?
A civil government.
Okay. And then our ten-horned beast, once again, that's who?
It's the Catholic Church, the papacy.
Okay. So out of these three, how many are religious?
Two.
Exactly. So here's our two, but we're shown here that the civil authority is going to cooperate with them. So do you have more on this here, on these verses, Brother Adi, you'd like to comment on?
No.
Okay. So here again in the symbol, brethren, we notice that there's something coming out of the mouth. Doesn't that work well with a false prophet symbol? A prophet speaks. False prophet speaks falsely. We read that when the image of the beast is vitalized, it will speak. So this is all coming together as the hints or clues in the Revelation that Brother Russell picked up on to help understand that the two-horned beast gets absorbed into the vitalized image, that the vitalized image, once it receives life, it includes all of the federated Protestant churches, and they are then known as a false prophet. And we still have our beast. We still have our papacy. That's our two halves of the Christian world. And now, though, we're seeing that they're going to cooperate with the dragon, which we think indicates there will be this future church-state union in the future, which we all have talked about. This would be the period of time, I'll just say this in passing, when you remember we went through Revelation 17 in our study on the heads, we went verse by verse in Revelation 17, and we saw that there was a time when these ten kings would give their power unto the beast, and they would persecute the church. And this is an eighth head. That is a repeat of a church-state system. We think this dragon, beast, false prophet, when they're speaking together in unison, that is that eighth head. That is that church-state cooperation again. They're all speaking the same thing falsely because they're trying to preserve society as they know it. They're trying to preserve the economic world as they know it. They're trying to preserve the religious world, Christian religious world, as they know it. And as Brother Russell observed, they do it by force. And it will last just a short time, just an hour. But does anyone remember or would like to comment on these frog-like unclean spirits that comes out of their mouth? Sister Cheryl, you gave a shrug. That's almost as good as a hand raise.
Well, we've thought that they puff themselves up. That's what a frog does. Puffs themselves up, makes croakings. They want to act bigger than they are. And it is a time, like you say, of preservation. So it's out of fear that they need to act like they are taking charge and authority to try to overcome what's coming on them. But it doesn't work. Over.
Okay, very good. I appreciate that. Brother Dan and Brother Adi.
Yeah, same thought, Brother Rick. The these three, the civil government, the papacy, and the false prophet, they make these claims. They are they're speaking their false doctrine. that all must listen to them, all must conform to their rule, or everything is going to come apart. And they do it from, you know, their positions of power, the civil government, through the press and so on, the news that goes out to the people, and then from the religious pulpits, the people are told that they are the authority from God, and that they are in place to keep society together and everybody safe and happy and so on. Just making up those words, but the point is that they all are saying the same thing, and as brought out, these frogs are chosen very well because they're acting wise as if they know all things, and so they're putting on this front to deceive the people into believing these false claims that they're making. Over.
All right. Thank you, Brother Dan. Appreciate that. Brother Adi.
So these three impure spirits that look like frogs, these frogs could be millions of frogs. It doesn't necessarily mean three frogs that are impure spirits. And when Egypt had the plagues of the frogs, frogs were everywhere. They were bothersome and you couldn't get rid of them. So it shows the pervasiveness of the spirits, actions or words. Over.
Okay. Thank you. Ruth.
I was making a connection in my mind when Jesus cleansed the evil spirits from somebody. Sometimes those evil spirits spoke to the person back at him. And in verse 14, it says, "For they are the spirits of devils working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the whole world to gather them to the battle of that great day of God Almighty." It's like I get the impression from the account that these three elements are possessed by these spirits, and that they're just speaking the will of these spirits that are trying to gather this all together. And they're not doing it to gather to the battle of the great day, but the Lord overrules it so that it backfires on them. But they're, so in other words, this beast, false prophet, and dragon, they don't have this wisdom of how to do this themselves. They're almost possessed by like this final ditch effort of these evil spirits.
Oh. So true. Very good. Thank you. Brother Chris.
Yeah, to go along with the comments, because we have three frogs and they are cold-blooded and they're all croaking, as the friends say, we know this is the time of, we've been talking about, the confederation of all three of these and the common goal. However, these three are all croaking, and each of them, as we learned from chapter 17, they have their own personal agendas. We have kings. And we have financiers, and we have the religious element. And so these, this croaking, even though it's all in the last ditch effort, as the friends are saying, to keep the status quo, each of them, it still has that confusion about it, that Babylonish confusion, because they're just croaking. Just if you've ever heard frogs croaking by a pond, they're loud, and they have their own agendas. So I guess that's the point I'm trying to make, even though they have a common reason to be together, croaking together. Oh.
Okay, thank you. All right, good. Brother David.
Thank you. Just along the same lines of any kind of frog, in order to make a sound, has to draw in air, and possibly thinking of Sister Ruth's comment, the spirit of devils, spirit of the power of the air, they have to draw in air, and they have a like a crop that fills up with air, and then they push that out. They have a very large mouth. And in a environmental setting, it's usually at night that these frogs, croak. And it's the croaking is really deafening if you've ever been out in the wild at night, especially in their mating season. It's very loud. And it drowns out all other sounds. That's my comment. Thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you. Sister Roseanne, could you read for us 1 Timothy? 1 Timothy 4 and verse 1 and 2. 1 Timothy 4, verses 1 and 2.
First Timothy Thessalonians,
1 Timothy 4, 1 and 2.
Now the Spirit expressly says that in later times some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared by a hot iron.
Okay, yeah, opening comment on this, these verses?
This sounds perfectly for what we're talking about.
Yes. Right. Yes, this is an example. Paul has written very clearly that these false doctrines, they are seducing spirits, but they're demon-inspired. And as the comments have brought out, that when this power comes to be, this triumvirate of the civil power with the papal religious and a federated Protestant religious leadership working together, it is going to be the wicked spirits in high places working through deceived humans that will be then putting forth these demonic doctrines that they are God's kingdom. They are God's kingdom. They have the right to speak in the name of God. And all who don't cooperate with them are traitors, heretics, and possibly even anarchists. And in that web, as Jesus was crucified between two thieves, in that web, the true church will undoubtedly, final feet members will be caught up with the broader net of those that will not want to cooperate with such an arrangement. But the vast majority of society, loving peace and security at a time of need, as Brother Russell observed, they'll go along with this. But all that is just to, again, we were looking at these verses to identify for us what happens with the two-horned beast. It disappears, as it were, as an individual, as an individual system. Once we leave the 13th chapter, it's absorbed into this false prophet, which will then include the vitalized image of the beast, which will include the Protestant world, Federated Protestant world. So is everyone following that, or is everyone on board with that? I don't want anyone to feel left out. There's a very important aspect of understanding this revelation. Is that we're all good? Ruth.
I was thinking of that verse, 14.
Which one? What 14?
Oh, sorry. Revelation 16:14.
Okay.
For there are the spirits of devils working miracles. Sometimes I think of that when I think it seems so unlikely that this will happen, but it says they're working miracles. It would be like a miracle that this would happen.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. There's multiple miracles indeed. Brethren have lectured on this For ourselves in addressing it, I do make a connection with Matthew 24. We're not going to go there. But the point is that I think the biggest miracle is that they could get this eighth head, this repeat church state system together, even though it's for only 1 hour. That'll be a miracle. And let me emphasize that many brethren don't see that. They just don't think that could happen. Many brethren just look out in the world today and they just say that could never happen again. But that's what we think we're being forewarned about. Brother Russell thought it would happen. And he used these verses of Revelation to demonstrate this was still something that he thought was going to take place. And that it was something that the final feet members of the church would still be in the flesh to witness and then to give a final witness. So it's still all a matter of faith to see whether or not it works out that way. But we're of the opinion that it's far better to be forearmed and forewarned and prepared than it is to just think, well, it can't happen because I can't see it out my window today. And if it doesn't work out, what have we done but try to have been more urgent in developing that Christ-like character so that we could be faithful? So that's kind of our thinking on all that. Brother Ronnie.
So the falling of the Berlin Wall, no one really thought it would happen, and yet it happened in a very quick time. It was unexpected. Over.
Absolutely. And no one thought that President Reagan would work with the Pope John Paul II in order to help bring it down. And they brought it down across all of Eastern Europe, as we know. So yeah. Okay. So let's then go back to our Revelation 13, the 16th chapter's ahead of us, and so is the 19th. Lord willing, we'll get there, but we just wanted to, we think that those couple of verses was what Brother Russell was working with. And when we're looking back here at the end of Revelation 13, when we get to this point in Revelation 13:15, we want to make an observation that we think we've entered into the time frame of the harvest of the gospel age. We've entered what Jesus called in Matthew 13 in the parable of the wheat and the tares. He said the harvest was the end of the age. And the age that's ending, of course, is the gospel age, being overlapped by the opening of the millennial age. They overlap. But nonetheless, we think that here we're now entering into the harvest, the end of the age in verse 15. In fact, we think we're looking at a time period that's still ahead of us in this harvest, still ahead of us. But nonetheless, it's just making that note. We've seen in earlier Revelation, we've seen that in the seven churches, when we reached the seventh church, Laodicea, we were in the harvest. When we studied the seven seals, when we reached the seventh seal, we were in the harvest. When we studied the seven trumpets, when we reached the seventh, we were in the harvest. And now, here we are, once again, we're in the harvest period. Even though we believe this is still a future event, but it is possible to receive this mark that we're going to read about willingly. That's possible. You just have to belong to one of these church systems and you've received the mark. You've marked yourself willingly. But our verse is telling us that we are going, our verse 16 that we're going to go into next, it's telling us there's a time where there will be an enforced mark. And that we believe is still a future event. So in verse in Revelation 13:15, he, the two-horned beast, had power to give life unto the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak, and that's what we're saying, it now becomes the false prophet, and causes that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. So this is showing that there is a power that's associated with this vitalized image. And so what do we think this killed would represent? Sister Roseanne.
We talked prior about the symbolism of killed being to convert. I don't know if that still applies here.
Well, that is a application we've given it when we were looking at particularly the trumpets, where there was the flip. That's true. There's also another thing that we've looked at as killed during the seals. Brother Chris, and then Brother Dan.
Well, since it's the beast in the image, they have this power now. They can kill, as they threaten the kings of Europe, with excommunication or discrediting them, or other means in which interdiction, for instance, whole societies or cities. So that's one way they can kill people spiritually or disconnect them from the source of life, which they claim to be over.
Okay. All right. Like excommunication. Very good. Brother Dan.
Very similar. They'll have the power to ostracize and set them apart as, evil, if you will, those who are not in favor of what's best for society, excommunication as brought out, and we think maybe possibly literal death, like during the Dark Ages when the power of papacy put many to death who would not go along with what they said was the true doctrine of God. Over.
Okay, very good. I happen to favor that it's both are possible in that way, like you just brought out. Sister Debbie.
Well, I always thought that this verse related to the next two verses, that they're killed by not being able to buy or sell if they don't get the mark. Part of the bowing before the image of the beast is getting the mark. In other words, cooperating with that image. So that if you can't buy or sell, you could starve to death, or you wouldn't be able to keep your home, you can't get a mortgage, you can't do all of that. So you're kind of out on the street, and in a way you die, in that sense. Over.
Okay. Thank you. Sister Cheryl.
Would this be the time that we would consider when no man can work? The time cometh when, work while it is called day, the time cometh when no man shall work, so the true won't be able to spread forth the truth without dire consequences. Over.
Okay, very good. Yep, we think they're linked. They're linked. Very good. It was like, as we've all read in the second volume, Brother Russell's application of the John the Baptist, anatypical John the Baptist picture, where he was proclaiming that this was an illicit relationship between Herod and Herodias, adulteress, and how he then was imprisoned, even though the people thought the message made sense of John. Yet, that was demonstrating once again in that picture, just very briefly, Herod represented the civil power, which was represented by this dragon we read. that Herodias represented the papacy, and that would be this beast, and that Salome, her daughter, was a daughter harlot, as it were, and that would represent the Federated Protestants. And John was imprisoned and then beheaded for his faithful message. So we are often asked, well, when would you give this message? Well, in one sense, we give it. Brother Russell was giving it. It's right in the volumes about what an illicit relationship is. However, it really takes on poignancy when you have a church-state government existing. And we really haven't had one yet in our life. We're waiting for it, as that eighth head. Then, when we speak about it, there's something to point to. And that was the thing with John the Baptist. There had to have been the marriage, the illicit marriage, in order for him to have something to bear witness to. So, okay, there's that. Sister Cindy and then Ruth.
I'm wondering where the Great Company is in all of this. I mean, this is going to be a worldwide event. And there's going to be no escaping the fact that there's a church-state union. There'll be no escaping the fact that they're going to put people to death. And it's like, and then we have that scripture. It's like, the fall, what is it? The summer's passed and now it's the winter and we can't work. And oh my goodness. It's like, well, I mean, where were you when all of this was happening? I'm not really, I don't get that. Over.
Well, it was like Elisha was with Elijah until the fiery chariot came and Elijah basically stood his ground and was carried up in a whirlwind and Elisha stepped aside. So when these events come to take place, apparently that's when the distinctions will become manifest. But just one last word before I call on Ruth. We always want to remember it's character development that's going to make the difference between little flock and great company. What are we doing with our lives? Are we fiddling around? Like Brother Gene would say, are we just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic before it goes down? Is that how we're spending our time? Or are we purposefully trying to develop a character like Jesus so that when the testing comes, just like that fiery chariot came down the road, it wasn't something you saw well in advance, came upon him suddenly. That's how testing works. And will we be prepared? So, okay, that's that. Ruth.
I was just thinking of the being killed should be killed being an excommunication. And then I was thinking during the Reformation or even before that, during the before the Reformation, if you were excommunicated, nobody was allowed to hire you. Nobody was allowed to help you. Nobody was allowed to give you, if you had business, nobody was allowed to buy from your store. You didn't get any medical. So these were all consequences. I was thinking of the 17, verse 17 being consequences of that excommunication. And then I was thinking, if we don't think that that can happen, just look at Nazi Germany. That's what happened. If you were marked, you know, with some symbol, could have been Jewish, could have been any of the other stars. They had all kinds of colored stars. But if you were marked by one of those, you were out. And so even though the killed could mean be consistently excommunication, there's consequences to that at this in this environment at this time.
What was the symbol? What was the symbol in the concentration camps for Bible students?
It was an upside down purple triangle.
That's right. That's right. The Bible students had their own symbol. Now the Jehovah Witnesses were swept up in that. There was no distinction, but brethren suffered with that as well. So it has happened in modern society. All right, good. Thank you. Brother Adi.
So can Muslims, Hindus, and Buddhists be killed since they're not necessarily alive, so to speak, within the organization? Or is this strictly for those that profess the Christian faith?
Well, that's an honest question. I made the suggestion that Jesus was crucified between two thieves, so the true church, the feet members, can, like our head, could be swept up with those that really aren't like Jesus, but they were condemned. So the revelation isn't so concerned about telling us about the heathen world. It's more concerned to talk about and warn Christians. And the Christians are suffering primarily in the so-called Christian world. So, but any who don't agree with the Trinity, I'm sure, will be fall under this condemnation. I'm sure that's true. Did you have a follow-up on that, Brother Adi?
No, I tend to agree with you. I mean, you can't just put walls down and say this only going to affect the Christians, because even in Nazi Germany, there's a lot of outsiders other than the Jews that were impacted.
Yes. Yes. It's true. You know, one of the other groups we don't often think about that was swept up in Nazi Germany was the Gypsies. Okay. Was there another hand here so far? Was I seeing? Brother David.
Thank you. I was thinking about that killed idea, just persecuted unto death, and the idea being by degrees. It could be, as was brought out by excommunication, but like Sister Ruth was bringing out and what we've studied in the first few chapters of Revelation is how the Catholic Church persecuted and took away the free rights of men to a point, and using the picture of the way the Jewish people petitioned the Roman government to have Jesus crucified, just the same kind of thing. And a counterpoint with that would be your point, Brother Rick, on how we measure our own personalities, or I'm sorry, not personalities, character development, so that this being persecuted by degrees, we have to have character that will match whatever comes upon us. And it isn't something we can really know. It's something we have to prepare for in advance, because the Lord is measuring us, and we're trying to measure ourselves in a day-to-day environment where we develop these stronger points. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Brother David. So the professor's on a point that we understand why God permits evil. In Revelation, we're learning why God permits evil to the true church. Why did God permit evil to Jesus? Why did God permit evil to the Apostle James, to Stephen, to Paul, to Peter? Why does God allow that? It's all part of our Christian development to demonstrate our faithfulness under testing, because the reward is receiving immortality, death proof, life within oneself, The Lord has to be sure. Who is he given immortality to? Got to find 144,000 that were faithful like Jesus. Although not perfect like Jesus, because none can be. But their perfect heart intentions helps them bring their flesh under control, that we will read that they will have not received this mark of the beast or its image. They have to at least accomplish that. So, in this sense, it's not just knowledge, by no means, but that knowledge of what, why God permits these things is a tremendous assistance in having our faith in God and having peace in heart when our flesh is not at peace. So, all right. I had mentioned, Sister Cindy.
Sorry, just got to squeak this in real quick. We actually did have a little mini vision of the Church-State Union not all that long ago in Michigan, when our governor, at the beginning of the COVID, and everybody was panicked and freaked out and everything else, and she was giving pretty much daily addresses to the people. Well, at one point she brought in four religious people. There was a priest, there was a whatever the Protestant priests are called, we had one of them, had a one of the Muslim priests and one of the Jewish priests. I don't know what I'm calling them priests because I know what that is. So and they all gave a little prayer, and the Muslim he just prayed to God, as it were. The Jewish guy prayed, they were all very nice prayers, except for when you got to the Catholic guy, he prayed to Mary. He didn't even bother with God. He prayed to Mary. And the Protestant guy was, he was rather militant in his, it was like he was, using that as a platform to get his doctrines across, is kind of how it came out. You can go on YouTube and see it. But it's just interesting that here we have a state, and in fact a country that was shaken a little bit, and people were like, oh my goodness, what's going to happen? And even then, a lot of people thought that getting a vaccination was receiving the mark of the beast. You know, that was quite popular for a while. So, you know, we see these little snippets of something. It's nothing like what's going to be, but it's just interesting that we have already seen, you know, the priming for it. Over.
Okay, thank you, Sister Cindy. We had mentioned that in the seals, when we studied that back in Revelation 6, verse 4. Revelation 6, 4. I'll just read it, if you'll remember. And there went out another horse that was red, and power was given to him that sat thereon to take peace from the earth, and that they should kill one another, and there was given unto him a great sword. And we just talked about how that sword was wielded by papacy as excommunication, supposedly killing someone spiritually, is brought out. That's the supposed, but that it could actually lead, and it did, in those dark ages, that the heretics were literally quite often killed. They were, as Ruth commented, they were restricted from interacting with others, so-called faithful. And that we've read, Brother Russell has it in the second volume, like the so-called St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, 10,000 Protestants were killed by the papists. So, the excommunication, the cutting off, is for sure a way, and secondly, it can lead to actual death. Sister Debbie.
I have a question. There's a scripture that says that people will see, and I'm just trying to, I don't remember the words of it, but basically the idea is people will see the adversary and they'll wonder why they were ever afraid of him or how, you know, I don't know where that scripture is, but it makes me wonder if that's literal or if that talks about, papacy, you know, or this beast. I can't remember where that scripture is though, but I was wondering if that was talking literally about Satan or if it was, you know, that they would see him and wonder why they were ever afraid of him or, you know, I don't know. Anyway, over. That's my question.
We're not going to go there, but I'll just give this so you can look at it. It's Ezekiel 28, 18 and 19. Ezekiel 28, 18 and 19. Ezekiel 28, 18 and 19. We think that's literally talking about literal Satan being destroyed in flesh on the earth in the sight of the people so that they'll know after the little season, after he's tested, the Lord has used him to test everybody. He will then be destroyed so they'll know that he's just not locked up in a bottomless pit again. All right. Okay, good. So here in Revelation 13, verse 16, and he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. So small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, it seems as if it's an expression I think we can all readily agree is all inclusive. No one is to escape this, as it were. To receive a mark, and you'll notice in the margin, if you have got the Oxford, the Greek is to give them a mark. It's either in the right hand or their forehead. So let's talk a little bit then about that symbolism. What is receiving a mark in the right hand and forehead? What might that symbolize for us? Ruth?
Well, the right hand would be cooperation, outward cooperation of going along with it, like for your own good, so to speak, physical good, temporal good. And then receiving the mark in the forehead is that you're actually all in. You're actually really believing their claims. So some might go along with it just for their own self-preservation or that of their loved ones, but not really go along with it. And then once again, like Nazi Germany, there were so many that cooperated that it couldn't have done it without all the people that cooperated. They didn't like it, but they had to go along with it. Or there were those that were really, really at heart gung-ho for it. So it's kind of like human nature. It's a description of human nature, really. Over.
Okay, very good. Appreciate that. Thank you. Sister Alice.
The right hand would be works, like witnessing or actions of the church, doing things for the truth. And you would, by receiving a mark in their right hand, they would not be able to do any work, or they would not do any work. And in the forehead would be doctrines, beliefs. They wouldn't have the truth. They would take the truth and change it. Over.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you. Brother Chris.
Yes, I was just going to contrast that with chapter 14, one where the true saints have the mark written, not the mark, but the Father's name and the Son's name written in their foreheads. So it's exactly the same meaning intellectually, heart-wise, spiritually. They're connected with the truth, and they had nothing to do with this mark of the beast in their foreheads. Over.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Sister Cheryl.
Well, it reminds, we're told to do with our might what our hands find to do. And we're also told to put on the helmet of salvation. So with our hands, it's our activity. The helmet protects our intellect of the truth. But here, they're given authorization to who can do this activity or have this belief. So we're told the opposite. So, but we'll be restrained from exercising these privileges. Over.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Brother David.
Thank you. I just have a short comment. In Nazi Germany, after they were convicted of war crimes, the only defense they had of these people that were being prosecuted in like the Nuremberg trials was they said they were just following orders, but in other words, they were doing the bidding of whatever the organization umbrella was dictating. So it is complete cooperation. Over.
Okay. So true. So true. Thank you. Brother Chris.
I'm just going to bring out the contrast. We've got two pictures that basically show consecration. In 20 verse 4, we know the saints are beheaded for Christ, and that's, of course, the surrendering of our personal will to follow the will of our master. And then in that 14:1, we have the Father's name and the Son's name written in the foreheads. So here you have a will, but it's you're intellectually following the head as opposed to being beheaded. Means the same thing, but two different pictures. Over.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brother Chris. Sister Gina, Brother Mark.
Thank you. Two scriptures, Deuteronomy 11:18. You shall therefore impress the words of mine on your heart and on your soul, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as fontails on your forehead. And then I'm not sure if this one was already brought up, but just in case, I can't remember. 14:1, I looked, and behold, the Lamb was standing on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his name and the name of the Father written on their foreheads. Over.
Okay, very good. And yes, we with certain Orthodox Jews, they will, you've seen them more often in Israel, but they'll have a little box with a leather strap to their forehead and one on the back of their right hand that contains scripture. All right. Brother Adi.
So I looked up in the Greek interlinear the word mark, and it's kind of interesting because it at least the interlinear that I looked at said it's carving, and carving is like a branding. So it's like a slave would be branded in the flesh to their master. So it's a unique expression. It's not a seal. It's not a writing. But it brings it out as being a carving. It's kind of interesting. Over.
That is good. Thank you. Ruth, you get last comment before me.
When I was down south colportering, the first time I ever heard of it was when we were in Albuquerque in a highly Catholic area, and you'd show people the first volume and they would say, is there the imprimatur in it? And I'd never heard of it. It's like, what in the world is that? And they said, no, unless it's in there, I'm not allowed to read it. It's got to be marked. And I didn't know what they were talking about. So they'd go get a book and show me what it looked like. It was like a seal. And it had to have that or they're not allowed to read it. So it just reminded me of that. That was particularly in a highly Catholic areas in the South.
Over.
All right, very good. I also ran into that coal portering in Albuquerque, New Mexico, particularly in the Mexican districts, where they would show even the only Bible that they would use was the one. Brother Dan?
Sorry, Brother Rick, for breaking the rules. Ruth's comment reminded me of my Catholic Bible. There's pages and pages that are put before Genesis 1:1, and basically it's a warning about reading the Bible, how dangerous it is to read the Bible and have thoughts of your own. And so the introduction by the Pope and by some bishop is like that seal, a warning of, you know, not to have any intellect of your own, but to believe as the church teaches, or you'll be in great danger. Over.
All right. Thank you. So brethren, we close here. We will come back to the handout in which we've listed all the verses in which the mark appears in the book of Revelation. And we've listed where the seal of God appears in the book of Revelation. That's on that email we sent. In case you missed it, it was sent out on May 10th. Check your spam folders if you don't have that. Because we'll go through these. We'll give them a cursory look so we have the comparison. Next week, Lord willing, safe return, I'll give my class first Ecclesia requested discourse will be on Revelation, the 14th chapter. We'll take up this study on the mark and these remaining verses. The following week after that, you will obviously see some connections there. And I'll leave you with one last thought. You notice that the seal of God in Revelation, it's in the forehead. It's not on the hand. In other words, you can't just cooperate in the Lord's work. You have to have the forehead sealing. You have to have the character likeness of Jesus Christ in order to have that seal. But with the mark of Christendom, you can just cooperate and you're acceptable. They'll take your donations.